Roseanne Rowe on Double J.
Mike Mills is the, I guess, a point of difference too. He's credited as co-producer of the album. What part did this filmmaker play in the new national record?
Mike was almost like, it's almost more accurate to say that he was the creative director. He's sort of the higher authority where he's just an amazing filmmaker who we're huge fans of. And he came to us with this idea to collaborate, and he ended up making this 25-minute short film that features the Swedish actress Alicia Vikander. And it's kind of like a 25-minute, a woman's life from birth to death in 25 minutes, a very compressed kind of view of life. You know, it's not just really a woman's story. It's kind of like this, you know, there's men and women and children in the film. And it inspired us, I think. It feels like a visual album or something, and he deconstructed our songs in it, and it kind of was the jumping off point for writing a lot of the other songs and finishing the record. And then Mike would come sit with me in the studio a lot and give a lot of feedback and just sort of throw the table over. Like, if something was nearly done, he'd be like, well, what happens if you just mute the drums or turn off those guitars and then improvise piano and reprogram all the drums? Or, you know, he was kind of, he just had fun. I think it was, he'd drink wine and just kind of make me run through loops and just kind of just to see what would happen. And it was a fun process. It was kind of nice to have, for all the band members, to have someone else be like in the driver's seat for a second.
Well, some people would find that really annoying if there was some guy from the outside drinking wine and telling you to do certain things. I mean, you're the producer, you're the guy who usually assembles all the music, and you're pretty much the kind of that's been your central role in the national. But did you enjoy that? You know, I guess taking your hands off the steering wheel a little bit.
Yeah, I did. I feel like I still did all the things I normally do, and so did my brother, and so did Brian, and Matt's wife, Corinne, was writing a lot. But I think allowing someone else, another artist, a very strong artist that everyone respects, to kind of direct traffic was fun. We, like I said, we still did all the things we would normally do, but it was nice to have somebody in the middle of it, sort of interrupting habits and subverting, you know, patterns and sort of, you know, it was cool. He's like, there's many examples, you know, the song Hey Rosie, you hear me improvising piano like I would play in my living room. That was really Mike just being like, I want to hear you play casually. It was written with a guitar part that I do play live, but at the end of the process, he's kind of like, just turn that off. I feel like I've heard you play that before, which is true. You know, I have played that kind of finger picking. And those are the kind of decisions that are kind of hard for a band to make, because even though I've played the producer role in a way, it's still very much a collaborative democracy. You know, everyone has their say, and we kind of grind each other down. So having somebody that was like in the middle of it, or maybe even above us, was nice. But he wasn't heavy-handed. I mean, he wasn't there the whole time either. So there's plenty of time for everyone to get to do what they wanted to do.
It may not have been your intention going into it, but did you feel like once you were in that with Mike and with the rest of the band, that after working so long together and now going into an eighth record, that shake-up was just what the National needed?
Well, the truth is, I don't think we would have made a record without this kind of film project to inspire us. Because I think we needed a break. Sleep Well Beast was a long tour, you know, and the record did so well and was a big, you know, moment. And we're all, I don't know, I think getting some space from the band would have been a good thing. But then we just kind of got inspired, I think, and it happened. So it's a little strange to find ourselves back in the thick of it, you know, so soon, but it's also exciting. It's just kind of like, whoa, what did we do? You know, but weirdly, I think we tricked ourselves into making what might be our best record, you know, or at least our most adventurous.
You were talking a little bit about habits. You know, the trademark of the National sound has been that big build and then the crescendo. But this record really moves into a different kind of emotional release. And again, that idea of space is something that really resonates. Did the particular stories going through this record, and I guess the themes of this album, demand that different approach? Because I guess given that what you said about some of the songs are written during Sleep Well Beast and then you sort of arrange them in different ways, what's the kind of theme? What's the drive of this story?
I think that a lot of the themes are very connected to Mike and Matt's writing and Corinne's writing, but it's, you know, the way I relate to it is really that these are stories of life at different points in all of our lives, and connections made, connections lost, how ephemeral life really is, and how quickly we go through, you know, at what stage of life am I? What stage of life are you? And, you know, I have kids, you know, like where are they? And this sort of idea, like, where is her head? Where are her eyes? Where are her feet? You know, just reflecting on life and the kind of like the hurdles and joys and tragedies and, you know, these kinds of rites of passage that we all confront. And it's kind of like what all of our songs are about, you know, romance and anxiety and joy in some way. But I think this record kind of like distills that in a much more tangible way because of the connection with the film. So it's almost like a visual album companion to the actual album. So in a way it becomes a little bit more concrete or something. It's like it's easier to put your finger on, I guess, for me, this album.
I mean, it's a film focusing on a woman's story, the short film, and the album really gives way to a whole lot of female voices. Sharon Van Etten, Irish singer Lisa Hannigan, the Brooklyn Youth Chorus, Gaylan Dorsey are just some of the voices that Matt takes really a back seat while these voices come to the fore. Was that part of an idea of telling that story of a much fuller story of what makes us human?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, part of it was just seeing the film. It didn't feel, and hearing our music and songs in the story of a woman's life, it didn't feel right that it would just be this heavy, you know, very recognizable male voice all the time, you know, that although it is sometimes. But I think that was the jumping off point for saying, it wasn't that we were gender casting the songs. It was more just like, well, it should be a community of voices. And young and old, and, you know, children and men and women. And seeing as we had, like, you know, Kate Stables from This Is the Kid and Lisa Hannigan and various people sing, or Gaylan Dorsey, who was David Bowie's bassist and collaborator, like, it, all of a sudden the songs took on a different kind of resonance, and it was exciting. And Matt was really into that. And he also, I think in a weird way, the songs that he does lead are kind of more, even more impactful because it's him, you know, like, so when he sings Light Years or you know, there's a bunch of Quiet Light, but where he's the center again, then they kind of, so there's plenty of that. So I think in a weird way, it's just more is more, you know.
And I would always be light years away from you. Light years away from you. I thought I saw your mother last weekend.
You and your brother Bryce are responsible for the creation of the music of The National by and large. Did that change the way that you approached composing this music, knowing that there were going to be different voices involved?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Where Is Her Head, I wrote specifically using words of Mike's that are in the movie. So I like wrote the music and then sang that song, and then Evo and his 18-year-old friend singer from London was in the upstate in the studio that I have in upstate New York working with me, and I was just like, hey, can you sing along to this? And so she sang it, and it just felt like, oh, this is something. Felt exciting. It felt like the band, but some different kind of version of it. And then Matt then wrote to that and sang, you know, like he kind of inserted a song into a song, and that was new, you know.
I think I'm hitting the wall. I hate loving you as much as I do. I think I'm running away. I feel the storm.
The same thing happened with my brother. Took words of Mike's that are also in the film and created a piece and set it on the Brooklyn Youth Chorus. It's called Dust's world in a strange light. And it's actually my daughter's favorite song because she's like, it's so light and airy. I love it. But that was new. Like these things hadn't happened before. Or I'm Not in Kansas. It's a similar thing where like Matt wrote a 12-minute song to this sort of simple guitar piece that I had, but then we edited it down to 4 verses, and then we inserted this weird like cover of a Thinking Fellows Union song, Noble Experiment, into it. You know.
If the sadness of life makes you tired and the failures of man make you sigh.
I think it was nice to be able to throw a lot of things at the wall and see what would work. And so it's less traditional songwriting than maybe in the past, where we would kind of like try to make something we had and make it as good as you can. In this case, we're kind of like just wildly swinging for the fences all the time. And then sometimes I think we pull it off.
I mean, we're talking a lot about the points of difference in this record, but for you, you know, 8 albums in, is every record somewhat trial and error? Are you always kind of trying things out to see what emerges in a new space for each record?
I wouldn't say it's trial and error. I think it's like what we're into or something at the time. So Sleepo Beast, I was experimenting with electronics and like samplers and, you know, weirder little synthesizers and stuff. And so I was writing songs with those things, and that's sort of what bubbled up. And similarly, and then I made the Big Red Machine record with Justin Vernon, and some of those techniques, like the way I was using drum machines and how the drums are playing off of them, they surface in this record. Like, a bunch of songs have those kinds of drum machines, and then, you know, Brian plays to them. And so you kind of just see this evolution. But then I also think we just make weird music, and like, we don't really make, I kind of feel like we're not a rock band. We're like we're like an art project of some kind. Where, because Bryce, my brother, he's coming from a totally different place where he's a classical composer. And so he's bringing in a lot of like more avant-garde influences. And then Matt, you know, I think wants to be sometimes wants a totally different thing. And that push and pull is what makes the band kind of interesting, I think. And the kind of the way that my emotional patterns or whatever, my habits, how Matt responds to that, and then the way Brian, he's kind of a machine when he drums. So whether it's a drum machine or it's Brian, it's kind of like it is fairly linear or fairly, you know, machine-like. And then that combination of like emotion and the machine is sort of what sparks things. And then Bryce responding to that with his take on it, which is often through orchestration, adds this other dimension. And yeah, I don't know. It's like, so it's hard to predict. We don't ever say like, hey, let's make this kind of record, or hey, let's have it sound like this. Sometimes there's metaphors that are tossed around that are interesting. And, you know, Matt doesn't speak in musical terms. He speaks in sort of visual or sort of, he'll be like loose wool or razor lemon, or this is kind of like metaphors that we're like, we don't even know what it means, but it'll kind of cause something, some response. So there's just, yeah, I don't know. I'm probably not making sense, but it is, people have been asking me a lot, like, it's weird that your band is popular. And I'll be like, yeah, I agree. I don't know, you know. And so I don't know, you know, I don't think we fit. We never really tried to make hits. We like Michael Stipe from R.E.M. a long time ago said to us, you either need a lot of hits or no hits, you know, and we're definitely in the no hits category. And at least in the traditional sense of hits, talking about, you know, mainstream radio or whatever. So I think it's like we've existed in this weird netherworld of the ugly ducklings that we make that do resonate with people. And we just keep finding new, you know, ways to be inspired about it, I guess. I mean, it's not without its struggles. There's definitely like conflict and people go through things and it can be hard, but they're creatively, it still works. You know, we still, every time I complain to a friend, like, oh, so, you know, this is hard or whatever, they're like, yeah, but you make, you know, you're making something special. And I don't think that's, I don't think you can separate the person from the artist. Obviously, you have to, you know, everyone has to want, has to feel good and feel healthy and want to be doing what they're doing, but we still do for the most part. So yeah, it's exciting. But I think every time we finish a record, it could be the last record. And I'm sort of at peace with that also, because I don't, there's no reason to make a record unless it's really special. So thankfully this one is.
Double J.